And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. And today we attack the movie that suggests that maybe there aren't good guys on both the Nazi and not Nazi sides. But we'll get into that and more. This is a movie event pod, fresh off the heels of Election Day. If you got a little catharsis you want to get out in you, we're going to do reviewing the movie Overlord right now. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here. We just came out of Halloween season. We did a whole Halloween franchise review.
Yeah.
We did the Suspirias. We did a horror movie news, a horror movie award show. We've been covering horror movies like crazy. So we could not resist this movie premiering on a Thursday night, right? An early premiere.
Yeah.
And having a 80-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. I texted you last night or two nights ago. I was like, Mike, why don't we just do this?
Why not?
Audible.
There is serious momentum for this online and on film Twitter, and there seems to be some people that do enjoy it, and there are surprising critical scores. We'll get into all of that. It's not saying that it's all great news, but It's a story worth telling, and it's a movie worth seeing, and we did that, and we're going to give it the movie event treatment. This is not an Oscar sprint profile. We do movie events from time to time that are not awards contenders, and we don't think they have any place, and this is up that alley, I would say.
We can also do a Nazi accent, Berlin und Normandy.
Perfect.
He's made a French slash Nazi accent in the same sentence.
Mike's going to start us off like he does with Gaston Kruger.
I wish the word and was really unt.
Okay.
For our English language. It's such a great word. I enjoy it.
Start the train. Maybe you can get that change sometime.
Cast und Crew.
Perfect.
Here we go.
Directed I'm going to need you to stop that immediately.
I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm red in the face. Here we go. Directed by Julius Avery. He wrote and directed one feature film called Son of a Gun back in 2014 with Ewan McGregor that I didn't see. Mike, were you aware of this movie before my last sentence?
If you didn't see it, then I certainly didn't see it.
He's attached to direct the announced Flash Gordon film.
Oh! Ties in with the Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen doing the theme song for the old Flash Gordon show. So see, we just reviewed Bohemian Rhapsody.
Julius Avery.
It's all coming together.
Overlord is co-written by Billy Ray of Breach, The Hunger Games, and Captain Phillips. Mark L. Smith, writer of Vacancy, which is a super underrated horror thriller.
That's Kate Beckinsale and Luke Wilson, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I don't think I ever got around to seeing it.
I thoroughly enjoyed that one back in the day, which I'm totally overhyping now.
Did you see
the new Commitments. You're going to see the Commitments and Vacancy. Like, oh, the Mike, and Oster folks recommended these two movies so many times. And then you're going to be totally... Well, the Vacancy, the one time.
It on the record that it's not the folks that suggested it, just you.
Just me.
Just you. Save the vitriol for also Mike.
They're totally going to see it.
I will only suggest hits to you, like Legion.
Better than average
and,
Vacancy.
And The Spirit.
Writer Mark L. Smith would go on to write The Revenant and Martyrs, and he's attached to write the next Star Trek movie, which, if I can recall, Michael, is the script that was commissioned after the infamous Quentin Tarantino pitch.
I have to do some research. I don't think they know what they're doing with that movie yet.
Right.
It's nice that they have a script, but I think they may not have a Captain Kirk even.
Well, we have the Revenant writer attached to it, looking over my show notes from the original Tarantino episode,
yeah,
like 17,000 Google documents ago.
Right.
Sounds
accurate.
Back when this time last year when we did our first Hollywood Hot Takes. And yeah, so they had the Revenant writer attached, and that's him.
Chris Pine may not be a part of that, and they're going all kinds of disputes right now. We'll see.
Chris Pine is just taking over Scotland back in the 14th century.
You're the history buff. Have you seen Outlaw King yet?
No, we're waiting for it. It's tomorrow, actually. Netflix tomorrow.
I will not be watching that.
I might watch it tomorrow at some point.
Because he shows full frontal nudity?
He does show full frontal nudity. It's going to be weird. 14th century Scottish dick.
Hey, man. Take it where you can get it, I guess.
But the production values are up. We'll see.
An Outlaw King or is Chris
Outlaw
Pine's
King.
Penis? Oh, all right.
Oh, maybe both.
Yeah.
Hopefully both. So Overlord stars Javon Adepo as Boyce. Adepo is from Fences. He's from The Leftovers and Mother, somewhere in Mother. I guess he was in there.
He's
the kid that really couldn't stand up to Denzel in Fences. Remember, we gave him a bit of a hard time
point. That Fences movie was also, nobody could stand up to that. That was Denzelling all over the place for 40 minutes at a time.
He was extra Denzelling in that movie. Mm-hmm. He had the poundage,
mm-hmm,
so he had all of the vocal power of like an opera singer.
The tracking shot monologues.
Which is why we are such a force to be reckoned with on the wavelengths here. The
yes!
We're sturdy. Sturdy in the, what is this called? The sternum area?
I think it's the gut is what you're...
Oh, yeah, we have guts. All right, so... Oh, what am I doing?
I honestly
Overlord
don't
stars
know.
Wyatt Russell as well from 22 Jump Street. Everybody wants him. He plays Ford. He is the son of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell.
That explains the dashing good looks.
Matilda Olivier is Chloe. This is her first major studio film. She's also been in the indie film The Misfortunes of Francois Jane, and she's got a bunch more movies coming out in the next few years.
Good for her. Welcome to the party.
Yeah, nothing that really stood out to me, but lots of movies.
Sure.
Lots of work.
Get work.
Emmy nominee from Fargo, Bokeem Woodbine, plays Renson. He's been in Spider-Man Homecoming, Riddick, and The Rock as well. Palau Azbeck from Game of Thrones. He is Euron Greyjoy in Game of Thrones, all you Throners.
Is that what you call yourself?
Fannisters, whatever you want to call it.
You call yourselves Fannisters?
Well, there's the Lannisters.
Does that make it okay to you?
Okay, you're not going to let me get away with anything? Okay,
yeah,
I get
ahead.
It. That's
I'm in a combative mood because I like this movie. I know you weren't crazy about it.
So it makes sense. I'll give you
all right.
The Game of Thrones... Throners is what I think people call them. They haven't come up with a word yet. Trekkies.
You could just call yourself fans.
Fannisters. I was.
No, that's not.
It's not
what
right.
I said.
It's not right. Anyway. Overlord. Let's get back to Palau Azbeck.
Who was good in this movie?
He's very good.
I thought he was a great bad guy.
Big
great,
bad.
Yeah.
The movie also stars John Magaro, Ayn de Castecker, Jacob Anderson, Dominic Applewhite, Glanny Tarfair, Joseph Quinn, Eric Redman, Mark McKenna, Haley Carmichael, and Mark Riesman. Story, inception, and production notes, just a few. This movie was initially considered as the fourth installment in the Cloverfield franchise, but eventually they went in another direction. J.J. Abrams is the producer, Bad Robot is the production company, so it would have made sense there to be a Cloverfield movie. I have in big
tie-in
letters.
Would have been
right.
Simple.
I have in big letters. If this actually happens in the movie, delete this. But it didn't happen
right,
in the movie.
Enough.
So again, the idea came from J.J. Abrams, and he pushed it off onto screenwriter Billy Ray, who then got Mark L. Smith involved and kind of went on from there. Operation Overlord was the code name for D-Day. So that hence the title.
Didn't know that. There you go. You are the history buff here.
Yeah, principal photography began in May 2017. I did a very little bit of research on Nazi super soldier programs on Wikipedia.
Okay.
D9, D-I-X, was a methamphetamine performance enhancer, and the war ended before it could go into mass production. But German mad scientists, I'm going to call them mad scientists, did use it on a bunch of their pilots.
Yeah, and I remember learning that Hitler also was strung out most of the war himself while he was leading on meth, or amphetamines at least.
This formula contained, in each tablet, 5 milligrams of oxycodone.
That'll get you feeling good.
5 milligrams of cocaine.
That'll get you super aware.
3 milligrams of methamphetamine.
At this point, you're just unconscious.
And there's a big, long parenthesis with the terms Pervitin.
Yeah, that's what it was called back in the day.
And Dizoxin.
So that was the miracle drug here that was kind of being parodied.
Right. And then I looked up, but it was too sad, human experimentation, which is just a long Wikipedia page. Very, very sad. A lot of human rights violations and crimes against humanity.
Yeah,
it's just disgusting.
Very important to remember that our president thinks there's decent people amongst the Nazis.
But fertile ground for horror, let's say, as a setup and some as a background.
Sadly, yes. Very, very sadly,
Mike,
yes.
You got some specs.
Yeah, let's do Overlord specs here. Written, like also Mike told you, Billy Ray and Mark L. Smith share screenplay credits, while Billy Ray also gets a story credit. Story by credit, I should say. Just don't tell his heart, his achy, breaky heart.
That was a unexpected laugh, mid-gulp of
thank
water.
You, thank you. Directed by Julius Avery, who had previously done a whole bunch of stuff I haven't seen, such as Son of a Gun, Yardbird, Jerry Can. Mike told you all this already. It's a 109-minute runtime on an R rating produced by J.J. Abrams and Lindsay Weber, and it's Abrams' Bad Robots companies, as long with Paramount, who are the production companies listed, and it's Bad Robots' first R-rated film. believe it or not. Paramount gets distribution rights on this bad boy and gave it a reported $38 million production budget, higher than I would have thought.
That's high. That's very high, Mike. That's so scary, very high that they may not make their money back.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. It could be, but that number, according to Box Office Mojo, Box Office Pro is projecting a $10 to $20 million opening weekend rake domestically.
Then it'll make
it. So it could make half its back in opening weekend. That'll and see work. Where it goes. Could be good news, and if you listen to the critical scores, at least as of this moment, this recording, it may compel you to see it yourself, and there's more to that story. I'll get into it. Here are the critical scores. Mm-hmm. 7.0 IMDb rating on just over 1,500 reviews, 85% Rotten Tomato score on 66 critical reviews, 56 of those being positive. That's the good news.
Right.
Average critical scores is 6.5 out of 10. Is that worrisome? Not in a vacuum, but when taken in conjunction with the Meta rating, which is a 52 currently, it could be cause for concern. More cause for concern is that we started the day, and the reason we saw this in the opening night was that it was a 90 on Rotten Tomatoes, a surprise 90, and in the day alone, it has dropped, probably got two negative reviews out there, back-to-back negative reviews, down to an 85. Yeah. That's where it stands now.
Do you like parades? Do you like parades in general?
Where is this going?
Do you like when there's shit just falling from the skies on your parades? Here it comes. What's even worse?
All right.
That was a terrible setup and joke, but I'm going with it. All right. It's even worse.
I have faith in you. Stick the landing here, bud.
It's late at night. What's even worse, Michael, is that only 66 people have reviewed this. We have seen in the past, in most of our reviews, 190s is kind of the typical, when everybody weighs in, it's like in the 190s, low 200s. So this is like the Mandy thing where, it's got 90%, it's got high 80s, but a third of the critics, or I can't do math, a fourth of the critics.
Reserved. Yeah, I think the first screenings to the public were just yesterday. We're recording this on national opening night, Thursday, November 8th. This debuted at Fantastic Fest this year, September 22nd, but I don't think this was out released to the public or any advanced screeners until very, very recently. So that could have something to do with it. We are on the record as saying usually when that is the case, when the public doesn't get their hands on it
bad
early,
news.
It does not
so,
fare well.
Shitty parade. Bring my terrible metaphor.
You did well
circle.
There. Yeah. I'll give you an 8.0 on the landing.
You got more?
Nah. those are all I got for Specs. It's a relatively new movie. I'm surprised we actually have a listed budget. And again, I'm surprised the budget is $38 million. But okay, this is what we came kind of paid for. This is what we saw tonight.
I saw 8 to $13 million forecasted, but $20 million would be nice as an opening weekend for this one. It would be half its production budget in one opening in 3 days.
Cards on the table. The number I saw was from Long Range Tracking. Box Office Pro has that every once in a while. They're weekly, actually, for the long range movies out in the future. And that article was listed as September 14th. So if there's something more recent you saw, it's probably more accurate.
Okay, so we've seen a lot of bad premises for movies, right?
Yes, we have.
You ready for one?
I'm ready. Give it to me.
The story of two American soldiers behind enemy lines on D-Day.
Well, that's Abrams. I mean, that's J.J. Abrams in a nutshell. Let's
but
not
then
tell
why
you
show all the Nazi zombie stuff in the trailer?
To get you thinking that it's going to be your Nazi zombie movie that you just showed me. I can't remember the name of it already.
Dead Snow.
Yeah, Dead Snow, which you're a big fan of, apparently.
I showed you the best scene from Dead Snow, which is the only reason to
I
watch
think you
Dead
showed
Snow.
Me a five-minute scene, and I was like, oh, I've seen the movie.
It's terrific. Yeah. There's 50 Nazi zombies. There's hammers. There's chainsaws. And there's carnage with a great beer-drinking, beer hall, anthem-type song.
So this wasn't that.
No.
I don't think it wanted to be as absurd and ridiculous as that. And as a matter of fact, we talked for the first 40 minutes or so. Well, this isn't a spoiler, but this is a war movie for the first 40 minutes or so.
Absolutely.
Surprising war
so,
movie.
Expectations, I'm a little surprised by that fact because we saw so much in the previews.
We did.
The last couple of days, those previews have ramped up. We saw the monster in the previews.
Yeah, I
the
wish
last
we
couple
didn't.
Of days.
I really wish we didn't.
And that's why I was like, I just saw it on Twitter in like a crazy preview where the monster's running at us. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's go see
Looked
this.
Cool.
I want to see this so bad. So in terms of my expectations, Michael, I am overhyped for this movie going into tonight.
You were the driving force. You were the driving force behind us reviewing it here. And so you were super excited. The 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, I'm sure, didn't help. Mm-hmm. Don't you live your life by the tomato meter. We always say that as well, even though we're kind of suckers to it and in conglomeration with everything else. But yeah, I could see you being overhyped for it. I didn't know what to expect, really. Certainly didn't expect a full-fledged war movie for the first 40, 45 minutes.
And you're also a little more balanced psychologically, that you can take a 52 Metascore and understand what that means. Where I'm like hard charging. I'm like, no, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. It's going to be my favorite movie of the year.
You were...
I went in because, I mean, the trailer's got Hell's Bells. You ready for my impression of AC/DC?
Jack, lay it on me.
No! That's my impression of AC/DC.
I wasn't ready for that. Yeah, no, I lied.
And it didn't work.
It's not
for me, this movie, just like that impression didn't work for you. It just made you a deer in headlights.
Yeah, it's not the movie that you kind of think it's going to be. I will agree with that. Sure.
So let's
at least it being totally Nazi zombies all the time.
So we've teased our reviews. Now, you enjoyed this movie more than me, but where I definitely enjoyed this movie is in the production values. These are super duper high. You see $38 million plus on screen today, and visual effects, stupendous.
They are. I made a note, though. I was kind of surprised. This movie was very timely in that it was helped a lot by certain recent releases, and it was actually hurt by a couple recent releases. That Halo jump that we have kind of to start the movie here, it's called a Halo jump because that's what it was in Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah.
But seeing it done for real in Mission Impossible Fallout kind of made the graphics of this one stick out. So that's in one way that a recent release hurt it. But the tin cans that we sent up into space and was highlighted in First Man.
True.
And then to see what they were replicated as here, I thought that was awesome. And it really made you appreciate the aspect of war and what they were going for a lot more. I thought in that way the graphics were helped out. The Suspiria playing with shadows and when is something too dark on screen and when can you just see enough of something? I thought that was done really well here, playing with lighting as far as sights go. So yeah, the visual production value I thought was quite high.
You have conquered movie podcasting with those last two sentences, because you brought in like the last week of our shows.
We reviewed all those things
into this. That's perfect. I don't even need to say anything. But yes, I love the cinematography and the visual effects. I really like the money on screen. You could tell that this has got a lot of money behind it. And it looked like D-Day, the invasion of Normandy.
Again,
I mean, it's
full-fledged war movie.
Yeah.
Full-fledged war movie. Like a decent war movie, a decent premise. I was kind of, you forget you're here for Nazi zombies at some point.
But we all know Nazi zombies is the draw because it's in every trailer.
Yes.
So we're not going to consider that a spoiler.
No.
So in terms of the production design of the Mad Scientist Laboratories, that's how I pronounce them when I'm going into a horror movie, Laboratories.
Sure.
And I think that it's awesome. You got bags of bloody blah.
Oh, yeah.
You got crazy things under whatever those
sheet of some sort.
You got things under sheets and beakers and serums.
Yeah, it all looked real.
Looked good.
I think they were helped out by the fact that the camera didn't really stay on anything. It was more of a panning shot and quick cuts. I think that was well done and purposely done, and it helped with quote-unquote realism in this case, because it's obviously not all that real, but it still is keeping it grounded in some ways. So yeah, I was down with all that myself.
What did you think of the sound? I mean, obviously the war movie sound is pretty strong in terms of the sound effects. I noticed the score a couple times. I wrote down a couple of moments when we got a drum beat for a hard charge somewhere, whether it's a war story or a zombie story. That was really good. And then it's harrowing in terms of the sound effects when we have a little bit of a horror movie. But if you're looking for a jump scare horror movie, this movie didn't have a lot of those effects.
I felt like it had more than Suspiria.
I think I
have that in my notes. Yeah.
Two is more than none.
Right, exactly. and I have that in my notes, is that this is more, it used the horror tropes more. It's a traditional beat by beat horror movie. Like, you know, it's like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, scary scene. You know, once the music stops, and the score did do a good job in setting up those scares. You just knew they were coming, and they came right when you wanted them.
In terms of the genre, this feels like an action movie with horror elements.
Okay.
That's where I'm at.
I could see
like,
it.
I get what you're saying in terms of narrative structure. It's a monster in the house thing.
Right.
It totally is. And it works as a horror movie screenplay, but it's totally action movie goods delivered for me. I don't know. I'm a freaked out.
I mean,
whether it's a
horror action movie or an action horror movie, it's probably close enough to the same.
We must decide. Yeah. 999. Sorry, I've been waiting to use the 9 stuff. I watched the Downfall trailer earlier today because I knew I was going to do a 9.
In preparation
movie.
For this,
I wanted to get my voice right, and it totally backfired.
You're doing voice warm ups. I love it. All right,
oont. I just kept hearing the word oont. It made me happy. I'm a very twisted man. Anyway, we have performances to review here, Michael. I'm not a huge fan of the protagonist here. I seen him in Fences having a real hard time.
We highlighted the best one, right? Pulu Özbek, I think, was playing the Waffner character, the big bad guy. I also like the Chloe character, Mathilde Olivier.
Yeah, she was fine. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything phenomenal there, but she does her job. She does a nice job. I'm into her character. I'm not a fan of
Wyatt Russell's character.
He's got some
legendary
action movie,
legendarily bad
raspy
action movies lines.
Yeah. We're going to make fun of those and have some fun with those. Yes. We're actually going to try and rewrite some of those responses.
Let us help you.
Yeah.
Let us help you, Wyatt.
Missed opportunity city.
Yes. They knocked it out of the park, if you want to very, very meta critically. It depends on what they were going for.
Can we laugh at them in a later screening after the whole World War II ambiance? Don't we ignore that?
It's done with. It's done for. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
You're right. Nothing really crazy action-wise or performance-wise, I mean, here.
And the main character struggles, and that's a major problem for me. I mean, he does a decent job in the action scenes. It's just all the dramatic scenes. It's like, he's such an over-the-top. And that's another thing. He's not a rounded character at all. He's just an over-the-top. Yeah. I'm going to be the hero in every scene. I'm going to save every animal. I'm not going to kill anybody, but I'm a soldier that is on this elite mission in World War II. You think you would have figured out that, you know, you'd only have your elite people going out there?
Well, they went with a plane full of soldiers for this.
All right. But the kid who can't hurt a fly shouldn't be on that,
a mouse.
That plane.
Couldn't hurt a mouse.
Yeah. What are we doing? All right. Strong choice, though, in my mind, to set a horror movie in such a revered historical setting.
That's, I like that as well.
That's an ambitious choice. Yep.
And like you said, you hit on it earlier. There's so much fruit here to kind of make a delicious horror movie pie with, as far as the setting of Nazi Germany and these awful, awful human experiments that went on. And it's also treated, I think, with enough absurdity to kind of make the idea that you shouldn't do this. This is sacred ground that shouldn't be kind of parodied. It's enough at an arm's length.
It's at arm's length, but it's not going for any comic value, which is important.
Right.
Other than like a few goofy things between one character and a side character, just banter wise. But this movie is not going for, this is not a horror comedy in any way, shape, or form, unless we rewatch it.
And there's no emotional, not that, you know, just for watching its sake, there's no emotional attachment to the victims that we do see. They're by the time we see them, they're already Nazi zombies. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah, we don't have a lot of stakes until till the end there. I do think that this movie, you know, I give it points for ambition for choosing the setting, but the setting kind of works against it at times, works against the narrative at times, because I think like Dead Snow works because it's such a campy horror movie, and this movie really, it kind of struggles with its tone. Like, does it want to go there and just go all out mad scientist lab run amok? Or is it trying to like do justice to the D-Day invasion, to the guerrilla warfare around France, to the French people and the American soldiers and all these types of American soldiers butting heads, and how do they go about their mission?
But don't you only have that struggle within yourself because the war movie part was surprisingly well done in this?
The war movie part, it was surprisingly well done. You can't go for both. Can you go for a campy horror movie and an actual war movie that's sane?
See, I think Dead Snow really killed you, because I haven't seen it, and I wasn't expecting it to be that kind of camp. And I think you were. That was part of your expectation.
Well, everybody I read, and I don't want to shout out. Well, I don't want to shout out because now I'm mad at them for telling me that this was a great B movie.
You jerks!
This is a great B movie. I love these guys. I love these guys' reviews. But as a B movie, I think of Dead Snow.
Right.
I think of something goofier.
Right.
Maybe I'm thinking of a D movie.
But
and
like
not a
House
B
of
movie.
The Devil could be considered, I don't know if you've seen that, but
seen that.
I mean, that could be considered a B movie.
That movie takes a long time to get where it's going, right, and then it gets there, and I'm very, very happy with the
right
ending.
So I think that that's more along the lines of something that I was...
One thing leads to another. what a great scene. That movie takes forever.
Yeah, it does.
Greta Gerwig's in one scene in that movie, too. Spoiler alert, Greta Gerwig.
Hey, speaking of spoiler alerts,
mm-hmm.
Should we dance?
Yeah, there's no Oscar lens.
Zero.
I think you can kind of wait for this movie on video or something. That's just where I'm at. I wish I loved the movie. You liked the movie. You liked this video.
Look, I liked it because it's pretty much, it's just a fun 90-minute, 100 and whatever minute.
Right.
Kill some time. You can get enjoyment out of it. It's very easy to follow. There's not a lot of you're not going to get the also right. Mike subtext allegory analysis this episode.
No,
it's
there's
not there.
No need for that. Right. It's, so for me, I just expected something else. I totally expected another kind of
you
movie.
You were beaten down by your expectation.
But it's not a bad movie. I have major quibbles with the screenplay. I'll mention those in the second half.
The screenplay, it hurts itself.
Sometimes. It could be a skip as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
You know the music by now. This is the spoiler section for the Mike and Oscar movie event review of Overlord, J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot production company's first R-rated movie. If you have not seen the movie yet, or if you do not want to hear about the twists and turns or what the plot holds within, this is a good place for you to pause the episode here, go watch the movie, come back. If you have already seen the movie, if you are just interested in our takes, or you do not care, you just want to hear about what happens, the twists and turns all throughout the movie, this is where you want to be. This is the spoiler section for the movie Overlord, brought to you by Mike and Oscar. So we usually start with carryovers. The first half of the movie we touched on a lot in the non-spoiler section. It's a legitimate war movie, but that doesn't mean that you don't have your own gripes with it. So let's start with some worse scenes. Where are we starting here, Mike?
Yeah, we just reviewed Dunkirk and Darkest Hour this time last year. These are war movies that are dedicated war movies, right? There's a lot of history behind it. Apparently, this plane full of army guys, they're on a mission to blow up some kind of church with some kind of antennae control helping planes.
Yeah, they have to go in to blow up the radio tower because that is emitting a signal with a satellite on top of it that is blocking communications to get the airstrikes
now,
in from America.
They make this sound like it is the most important tower that they're going to save the war and save D-Day. All right. So if that's true, you're sending a bunch of first-time grunts with one Wyatt Russell and one Bokeem Woodbine on a plane amidst all these others getting shot to hell, and your plan is that they paratroop down, meet up, and hopefully storm a Nazi base.
Yep.
Where there's going to be more Nazis than whatever you had in the plane. And it's not like you got elite covert ops guys or elite, you know, SEAL Team 6 dropping down. You just got regular old grunts.
Can I play devil's advocate for your mind for a minute here?
Okay.
If the lead up to that scene, the drop zone scene where they are getting shot up in the plane, they jump out of the plane, they parachute down, and only like five of them make it, right?
Yeah.
So if the lead up to that wasn't shot in a way that very heavily suggested we were already in D-Day, you being the history buff you were, would that have bothered you as much?
It would have bothered me a little less if they were like in some kind of stealth plane, the best stealth they had.
But you just said
Captain America, and they were dropped behind enemy lines. That would have made sense to me. But that wasn't it.
But
it
you just said you didn't like that they had such inexperienced soldiers. If they had just one plane.
I still wouldn't have liked it, to answer your question. It still would have bothered me. The fact that they're going with the D-Day invasion makes no sense. Because now they have 10 hours. I guess it makes sense that the D-Day invasion takes time. But 10 hours or 12 hours to take down this church that supposedly controls all the... No, we already seen this. Benedict Cumberbatch was able to do this with codes. This is bullshit. I'm sorry. And also, this tower that has to be so strategically important,
yes,
just so happens to be the mad scientist's base of operations.
Poor planning on the Nazis' parts.
Obviously.
Poor planning on the
Nazis'
parts.
And guarded by like 25 Nazis.
30. Or 30 or 40, 30, they said.
32 Nazis.
Yeah.
32 Nazis, and I guess they're figuring that they would have the zombie soldiers up and replenishing their ranks because they're all defending, you know, Normandy beaches.
And it was in the, they had to traverse through woodland. They went through the forest. It's not like it was on the beachfront of Normandy there.
The plane got shot up and just like in its death spiral just so happened to get close there to there.
They were in the drop zone. They made it
right
to the drop zone. But yes, they finally do get dropped.
None of this makes a lot of sense.
A lot of the faults of this script, for me anyway, if we're doing worse scenes, isn't, and I know you have your problems and we tease it in the non-spoiler, is in the dialogue. Why is it every war movie, and for the first 45 minutes, like you said, this is a war movie. Why is it in every war movie, when you are first meeting the soldiers as a platoon, they're always like the most guy stereotypical, like, hey man, can I get my fucking chain back? I'm just busting your balls, play like.
And that one guy, that tough talking New York guy, Ratso Rizzo, is just like, boys, you've been the worst soldiers ever since boot camp. You're still the worst soldier. Here, take your stupid little relic or whatever.
But it's not like that's necklace. A fault of just this movie. That's like in every war movie that has ever been made.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I was. So yes, again, dialogue will be a problem, but yes.
You're not built for this, boys. You're never going to make it, Dewey. Yeah. Just walk hard. You're never going to make it, honey.
So, yes, the drop zone happens. The plane explodes right as they were dropping out. Boyce jumps out of the plane just in time. We have
awesome
the
scene.
I had issues with the graphics just again because I had the freaking Halo drop from Mission Impossible so fresh in my mind.
It's like looking downhill at a concert screen. A tiny theater we were in.
You always have to take these shots.
It's a shiny.
You gotta take these shots.
I'm standing in front of you and I'm punching your theater in the face.
The
so it's not like
theater.
It's not a secret shot. It's a tiny screen, and so it didn't bother me.
Okay, fair. That's
if
that's
it was
fine.
Blown up on the IMAX screen that I wanted to go to.
I wasn't crazy offended by it. So we'll move on. So yes, Boyce does jump out. He finally hits the ground. There are like five of them that actually make it to the ground. They see their platoon commander actually gets shot up by a bunch of German Nazis in front of them.
Bokeem Woodbine.
Yeah. So he's gone.
We had 1.5 good actors in this movie, and now the one is gone. Now we only have Wyatt Russell's a half a good actor.
Oh, my God.
No, I should say that. Palau's pretty damn good. So we had 2.5 good actors.
All right, fine.
All right, so unfortunately, that happens. Bokeem Woodbine goes down, and the crew gets back together, or the remnants, like the worst of the crew. Survives. You got the photographer.
Yes, who is there to like just be scared, essentially.
Right. You got all these like knives in their teeth kind of, you know, Marines. Mm-hmm. So maybe they had a better force. It could have been the Predator. It wasn't the Predator force.
There was tons of planes that were coming. That's
Carl
my point.
Carl Weathers, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I don't think it was just these guys. They weren't supposed to be the only ones here.
Right. The writer survives. The photographer survives. The worst grunt in the world. And his main heckler. And, of course, the expert second-in-command, Bokeem Woodbine, on the plane is like, just in case I die later, 15 minutes from now, you take this man's word just like a command from me.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I'm being written out of this script soon because I'm only getting scale.
I am here for a week. And
I wanted a trailer.
I'm on screen for 2 days.
They said I don't get a trailer. Yes, he is done away with. The platoon commander is gone. So we're down to, what, four now, right?
And the writer is one of them. And you just went to the bathroom.
Yes.
And I texted you. Do somebody step on a mine? You asked me who died. I'm like, Grey Worm from Game of Thrones.
Yes, so he's
which
gone.
Meant nothing to you.
No, I didn't
But
understand.
He was the writer. And right before it, he was just like, almost pitching it as a narrative device, like he was going to be the one who chronicles the whole story.
Ah.
He's the writer. I can't wait to write.
Well, see, but that's taking a shot. That's satiring all the serious
war films.
But
here's the thing. We can't laugh at it necessarily because we got a serious war film mood happening, tone of the story. We can't laugh.
It could still take pot shots. We have a serious movie review podcast. You take shots at my theater all the time.
I took a shot at your theater. It's your damn Skippy I did. Dead ass I did.
Yeah.
Anyway. But he's like the Simpsons character in the McBain script. Not McBain, but the character's like, I'm going to sail away on the ship, live forever. Yeah. McBain kills him in the next scene. So, poor Grey Worm.
Oh, Grey Worm, I love you. Eventually, the survivors of this platoon, now we're down to three or four guys, is met with Chloe. The Chloe character introduces herself. She's a French townswoman. She takes them back to her place.
Right.
And we find out that she, A, has a little brother, 8-year-old, who loves baseball. B, is taking care of her aunt, who she just describes as really sick, which we know right away means that she's some form of messed up because of these experiments.
Basically
or
turned into the Fly at the end of
Pretty
the
much,
Fly.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
Jeff Goldblum at the end of the Fly, which was a good little bit of a jump scare. But she's also not crazed in that scene, which was interesting. But
yeah, I had questions about that. So, and they are able to keep safe there. As they're at Chloe's house, we find out that Chloe has a previous relationship with the who would become the big bad guy in our movie here, the Wofner character, Pilo Asbuck.
Again, it's just hard tonally. I can't laugh at another joke anywhere else in the movie when I have basically you're getting raped tonight.
Yeah, he's forcing her. They have some kind of agreement that basically he's letting her keep her brother, little brother, right. and aunt safe. Not bringing them to the church for all these experiments as long as she's basically his sex doll. Right. And so he starts forcing himself on her, and that brings out our heroes, Boyce and Ford, come down, knock out the big Wofner character, and they basically have him for interrogation at that point.
Now, Ford gives him a brutal interrogation. It's a kind of a crazy scene, but it's an aggravating scene because, you know, you can just get it out of him quicker and go full torture, or you can like, be honorable and not do any of that or just kill him quickly. I don't know what you could do. Whatever they did there was as dumb as
Well, there was a question I thought that was interesting here that kind of was brought up a few times, and that's in the moment of war. Where does a soldier draw the line? And obviously we don't, because men that are heroes and braver than us have to answer this, so we never do. Yeah. But the Boyce character was watching this rape happen. Ford wanted him to not act a couple times, and then Boyce couldn't take anymore. Right. So even though he put the whole mission in jeopardy, he goes to stop the rape.
All of this so much heavier than themes and dilemmas I wanted to see in a campy horror movie.
Yeah, but that's your not, problem. That's the problem.
Like, it was not a campy horror movie. I know. That's what I'm not expecting to go to Saving Private Ryan 2 here, and that's what we get for the first 40 minutes. Yeah,
for the first half.
That's where I'm at here.
Okay, that's fine.
And it's not doing it as well as Saving Private Ryan.
Of course not, but it's... I appreciate it for what it was. I understand your expectations really is what kind of undercut this whole experience for you. I'm getting the feeling. And that's kind of where you put the blame at. You
admit,
basically, Ryan Terry and you are in a fight, is what you're saying. And we love
We've
Ryan.
We've been getting so long.
Yeah,
so
we love Ryan.
Ryan, our buddy.
We really respect him. He's a great writer.
Well, if you disagree with me, though, read R.L. Terry Real View,
yes.
And you'll agree with Ryan.
Pick sides. The lesson, as always, though, is I'm the middleman and I'm right. So now that we're here, we have the interrogation going on with the Wofner character. In the interim, Boyce is escaping soldiers and ends up going into the church just by happenstance because his escaping led him there by chance, essentially. He had to hop in the back of a truck where there were a bunch of dead bodies. He had to hide under dead bodies just in trying to escape the soldiers that were there. He ends up in the church already.
So we realize there's like 14 Nazis at this base, basically.
Yeah. Not heavily guarded.
We realize it's not heavily guarded. And we realize that he's able to just stumble and bumble around.
Not as heavily guarded as the human experimental lab / radio jamming frequency.
Listen, it's suspenseful, the whole sequence.
It is.
It works, and it's cool because you get to see the whole setting. The problem is, once we see the whole entire setting and we actually get glimpses of the monster in the scene, it's just like a forced preview of coming attractions, which is aggravating to me because you could have written that in better. It's just like a plant. All right, we got to set up the finale of the movie.
I had issues with that as well. I thought they should have hidden a lot more than they did. They probably should have hidden the laboratory where the experiments were going on. We see the bad guy Wofner inject himself with the serum, which we'll get to way too early for my liking, and we see him do it, which I also hated.
We also see the most grotesque, craziest batshit stuff in this sequence where he finds the head that's talking.
Severed head that's connected to its spine still and just talking, saying,
"Help me,
s'il vous plaît."
S'il vous plaît.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most disturbing thing of the movie.
And you're right
me.
In that the tone at this point is still serious war movie. So you're seeing like this head that's, the tone does,
look,
it is hit and miss.
If you're going to pay off all of that stuff with a humongous spectacle at the end, it's going to work because this is leading into the midpoint of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the midpoint, and we get that midpoint back at the upper room where after he gets his friend out of there.
Yes.
you have the midpoint where the guy finally turns into a monster. So that's
Spielbergian
story structure,
right?
Middle of the movie.
This is so Boyce eventually does get his friend who he just found by happenstance and was being held captive and part of the experiments in the church, gets him, escapes. They escape through this underground tunnel, Chekhov's underground tunnel, essentially, because that's going to be the way in and out of the church for the rest of the movie. They get back to Chloe's house. Boyce and Ford are interrogating Wofner upstairs. They're going to use him as a distraction to get into the church, except that Wofner finds himself alone after getting beat up by Ford in the interrogation, finds himself alone with Chase, the photographer character, and ends up shooting him in the chest.
Yeah, so now Boyce took a serum.
Yes.
And put it in his pocket.
Yes.
While running away.
Yes.
It didn't stab him.
No.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I had an issue with that, yep.
He gets back, still got the serum, and horror movie characters make bad decisions. He just saw all these glimpses of freakish monsters in there. He just saw all this. Mm-hmm. To save this photographer that he kind of just met on the plane.
With the serum.
With the serum that he knows,
Is being dripped into.
Monsters.
Yeah.
How about
the decision by Ford, who's the group leader, sending Chase, who's the fucking photographer, to get the Nazi commandant general down from his holdup spot and get him ready for entering the town? I thought that was a poor decision.
You have no combat experience, right?
Go upstairs alone with this mass killing machine.
the best of their guys? Bring him to me. What are we doing?
Yeah. Poor choice there. So, yes, Chase is shot. Boyce injects him with the serum. Chase turns into a monster. And then we see Boyce actually capable of killing something, right?
That was a cool sequence.
Cool storytelling.
Crazy, you know, he's contorted and he's starting to rage.
Breaks like his own neck, snaps it back.
28 weeks later,
zombie.
We've
seen him die.
Right.
He's been dead, so this is him reanimated. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we're waiting for him to turn to the Nazi, and he's doing it before our eyes. I like that.
I thought that was fine. Just give me 100 of those, please. And give me a sequence where all the good guys have to fight those bad guys. If you're going to give me a horror action movie, I want a spectacle, and I want fighting Nazi zombies. I want that. I prefer the way Tommy Vercola does it, but that's fine.
And in Chase becoming reanimated, Wofner finds his opening, grabs the little brother, 8-year-old brother, escapes out the house, gets shot through the mouth in the escape.
Crazy.
Cool battle scene. Cool
action
scene.
Doesn't pass out, which is insane.
He's a tough son of a bitch.
Tough
really
son of a bitch.
Really tough guy.
Shot through the face.
Yes. Awesome. And it pays off well with what he turns into.
And gets back there and stabs himself with not one, but two serums.
Against the
doctors.
We've
never tested it. On a live person.
Against the doctor's orders, yes.
Okay.
So now we got...
You're crazy!
We got Super Shredder Wofner here waiting for these guys.
Well, just not even addressing the hole in his face, which is fine, but he still has...
I hated seeing him inject himself. I wish that reveal of him was saved for the big epic encounter.
This guy's got the best lines throughout the movie. I mean, 1,000-year Reich requires 1,000-year soldiers, and later on he'll drop a doozy on all of our heads to the point where Wyatt Russell's like, but all right, we're getting there. So essentially, he gets away with the kid too, right?
Yeah.
Did we mention
that? Grabs the little boy, yep.
So now we have a little kid, you know, is the damsel in distress in this scenario.
Chloe motivation. That's why she's here. So yes, right. We have Wofner and the little boy go to the church. So obviously the platoon we have left, Ford, Boyce, the two others, they're going to give chase. Chloe gives chase as well.
They did have an actual plan for once in the story.
I loved
it. Before that, it was like, all right, we're winging it. But now we actually got a plan where she, you know, gets that asshole Nazi to basically try and rape her again. So it's a honeypot, but it's gross.
Yeah.
But it is a plan.
Yeah. So they do break into the church.
And they tape him to a bomb.
Tape this Nazi to a bike who's expected back at the church. Arm him with explosives. The pin of the grenade is in his mouth that somebody else has to pull out as part of his mouth being taped. Genius. Loved it. Big kerfuffle in the front of the church. Buys time for Boyce, Ford, and Chloe to go in again through the Chekhov's underground tunnel. Getting inside. So we're placing explosives. And now we're leading up to the big fight scenes.
Big fight scenes in quotation marks because
not big enough from you.
Not big enough for me.
Okay.
And especially, I didn't expect a one-on-one fight scene to be the end of it.
Oh, you didn't?
Because
okay. How could you not?
No,
the dude's injecting himself with the serum. Of course it's going to be him.
If it's a Marvel movie and you have... I want to spoil a Marvel movie right now, but there was one Marvel movie where that didn't end in saving the world on a ticking clock, right? Or the universe. Yes. One of the two.
Yep.
The one that did not do that had the awesomest one-on-one or two-on-one fight scene that I've watched in a long, long time. So if you're going to end with a fight scene of that caliber after all the setup of all these little goodies that could be horrifying, each and every one of them, in succession, as a collective... On all these, you got all these henchmen. You got a bunch of reanimated dead corpses. You got a bunch of prison cells full with Nazi zombies. You can have a horde. You can have a horde. It's a zombie movie, and we don't have a horde scene.
But, Mike, if that happened, it's two human men and one human woman. If that happened... The Nazis win.
But you know what that does?
The Nazis win, man.
That makes the characters underdogs, sufficient underdogs.
And dismembered, most likely.
Well, they could die heroically, Michael.
But then the Nazis win the war.
You gotta write yourself into those corners. You have to.
I love that we only saw three and everything else was held behind locked doors.
I loved it.
It's expectations again.
I just think you have to put your characters in the highest level of jeopardy you can. As a screenwriter,
They were up against the doctor.
And very quickly, after he's hooked through the chest...
Which happens, yes. Wathner and Ford have a big standoff as Ford and Boyce are trying to set the explosives around the tower.
I cannot laugh at anything during this sequence because...
You're not supposed to!
I know! The son of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell is hooked through the chest.
Wathner,
and he's screaming in agony.
Yes, Wathner is super shredder, super strength, hooks Ford to a giant hook, not unlike Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw. Boyce has an encounter with the evil doctor, who's a frail old man. He takes care of him handily.
So here's why.
And so we have Boyce and Ford against Super Shredder Wathner.
Here's why I say I'm mad that I can't laugh at anything, because there's awesomely bad dialogue in this, Michael. What the hell else isn't? It is awesomely bad. How does it feel to have the blood of eternity running through your veins? And his response, not so fucking great.
Yes. That's, dude.
I almost wanted to text you.
This
there.
Is the piece de resistance of this movie, because I don't think it's awesomely bad. I think it's just fucking bad.
I think it's just bad. I could have taken, if I was in a more laughable state, I could have taken that as a funny line, because after the greatest setup.
Yes.
In a question asked from the
but what
nemesis.
Exactly, what's the payoffs going to be that's acceptable to that question?
We've been trying to... Let's do an improv segment.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Mike, how does it feel to have the blood of eternity running through your veins?
Kind of overrated.
That's me.
How does it feel to have the blood of eternity running through your veins?
Like a Red Bull. Terrible.
Kind of like, you know how you feel when it's your birthday, but it's nobody else's birthday, but it's the night before your birthday, and you get really excited, but you gotta control your anxiety? It feels kind of like that.
I don't know, it hasn't kicked in yet. How do you know it's the blood of eternity? Blood of eternity?
I think I got a bad batch. Yeah, so this is after Ford has injected himself.
We suck
with the
at improv,
serum.
But
I was great.
I suck at improv.
I thought it was both hysterical, but yes.
You could have had good response. You could have had a better response.
I will say
than that, and that response is a comical response.
I don't think it was comical. I think it's just bad. That's what
not
I mean.
Not so fucking great. They wrote down not so fucking great at the end. At the end of Blood of Eternity,
J.J. Abrams has dealt in Star Trek and Star Wars lingo, dialogue, conversation, and he lets not so fucking great.
It's the biggest thing in the whole movie. It's right before he defeats him.
It's bad.
He defeats him. It's supposed to be like an awesomely bad action movie line.
How does it feel? You know, whatever.
But we got major tonal problems. Yeah, whatever, bro. Come on.
I will also agree, getting off that.
How does it feel to be the son of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell? Not so fucking great.
Look at this hair. I will say, all the potential was there. I was expecting a one-on-one combat at the end. I think there was an opportunity missed that if you're going to go the miles to have Super Shredder Wafter, and you're going to go
like
the miles.
Super Shredder
Wafter. I like him too.
I just wanted him at the head of a horde.
If you're going to have Ford inject himself too to keep himself alive and turn himself into an animated monster, let them fucking Hulk out on each other. Let it be a giant fight.
It's like an arm wrestle and they turn each other once or twice.
Yeah.
It's like the Team America puppetry. It's just like.
I was disappointed by that.
It's a totally disappointing fight. It's not a Marvel movie fight. When the Marvel movie has
which is what
a
I
good
want.
Guy and bad guy
I did
square
want
off.
That. I did want that.
You have two superhuman strengths.
Exactly.
And they fight like a bunch of wimps.
So,
not wimps, but it's not a great fight.
So the fight takes place in the laboratory. Ford is defeated because he only had one serum put into him, so I guess it didn't feel that fucking great, as great as you feel.
Right.
He rolls an oxygen tank towards Wafter. Boy sees it, shoots the oxygen tank. Big explosion. The room doesn't blow up, though. This room lined with explosives and dynamite that Boyce had just
Everything
set,
is flammable.
It does not blow up. It only blows up after Boyce escapes, has to leave Ford behind at Ford's beckoning because our side can't have this poison either.
My character has assassinated itself by torturing another man during wartime, but also by not having a comeback at the ready for a great question at the end of an action movie. How's my improv now, bitch? I need a while. I can't
Score
do what I can do.
So not improv, per se.
I'm a writer. I can't do improv. I come up with it after I think about it. As you talk, I was thinking.
So Boyce escapes. Okay. Ford stays behind, chooses to die with the serum, doesn't want anyone to know about it. Boyce is given the choice and keeps the secret from his commanding officers at the end. I did like when Boyce is escaping. It's pretty much one long tracking shot, and we see the church crumble in the background. I thought that was extremely
cool.
Well done.
Now, he gave a much longer speech discussing the imperative and the necessity for Boyce to get out of the place and set the timers.
Set the timer for
and
the explosives.
And he gave him instructions that lasted longer than Boyce's escape. He's like, make sure.
That's a really good point.
And by the way, shake Tommy's hand for him. And he kept stopping it as he's turning into Jekyll and Hyde face.
Do you know I got the blood of eternity running through my veins?
By the way, what should I have said? At that blood
notes.
Of eternity that I...
Can you give me some
I
notes
couldn't
on
think
this?
Of anything. I just gave it a deadpan response that can't be funny in a movie of this tone
I
and structure.
I shouldn't have been hired for this part.
I've been spewing every line of dialogue throughout this movie.
Can you believe they took the 58th take?
They're making me keep my accent at bay, but I really have a great California accent.
Fuck. Oh my God. Yes.
Terrible.
We could help the script.
The Californians.
Yeah,
that's what he
much,
talks like in
much.
Real life, and we couldn't see it.
So that's the plot. Boyce escapes, keeps the secret to himself. Him and Chloe and his other two pals have a great reunion at the end of it. The little brother's safe.
They just have another 9 years left of war to go.
Hey, man, yo, this sets. Ryan said this doesn't set itself up for a sequel. I wholeheartedly disagree. That little boy could fight Nam, and we could have it all over again, baby.
Yeah, I mean, if this movie makes money, they can keep finding these mad scientist labs every other week.
I did like that the Chloe character takes it upon herself to not listen to the men once they get within the walls. They're like, can we do this first? She goes, no, I'm here to find my brother. Fuck you guys and your bombs. I'm finding my brother. She goes off on her own.
Yeah.
She gets into perilous
fight.
Yeah. I like that. I like the way she was written. I think she was great. Listen, again, expectations, right? This is all expectations.
They mean everything.
Driven.
I agree.
Yeah, I think this.
However, I made some points about the script that I stand
by. Oh, 1,000%.
Okay.
There are some.
So this is not a 90% movie,
I
no
gave
matter
it a
how you look at it. Final grades for me, it's like a B85, I would say.
You're still that high?
B84, 85. Yeah.
Jesus. You talked that down
I
about it?
I that much shit. I'll say 84 then, fine.
All right. I'm like an 82 B-. Like, I... But I thought it was good because I was expecting just kind of fun and to kill time.
B minus is good for you, though. B minus is. Like, I love to love movies, so all my grades are high.
I think 85, we're talking like Oscar type.
Right.
I mean, that's
so
for
I'm
me.
Wrong.
That's for
all
me.
Right.
No,
B
minus. I'm not trying to criticize your grade. I'm just surprised that
this
you
is not
that
a high. B movie for you?
B minus. I mean, it's fun. It's
B
a
minus.
Fun little movie.
B minus. All right.
Not so fucking good. Took it down a couple points, I'll say.
Not so fucking B. It's a B minus.
Do you think this will get t-shirts printed? That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Movie Event Podcast for Overlord. You can call it campy horror fun. You can call it a horror action. You can call it an action horror. Look, we didn't say it in the non-spoiler section because we really couldn't, but just mind your expectations with this. If you choose to see it based on this or any other review, it's not a 90 Rotten Tomatoes movie. It's right. Not an 85 Rotten Tomatoes movie. 7.0 on IMDb might be a little high. It's you know, it's what you're going to get.
I call him like I see him. I get
upset. Is the implication in that I lie often?
No, I get, but here's the thing. Like, we decided to review this movie, sight unseen.
Yeah,
so basically, when we choose a movie to review, it doesn't mean we're going to love it. And I think we've been positive about a lot of movies recently.
No, we're honest. I mean, we pitch ourselves that we're going to be honest through and through, and we're
so this is
we'll
one
take
of those.
Down we'll take down an Oscars movie just as quickly as we'll take down a campy fun movie. And
this is a movie. Yeah, I just can't resist taking it down.
It is what it is. And you gave it an 85, 84. It's not taking it down. You're fine. JJ, you could still work for JJ.
I just love to love movies, and I'm a little disappointed.
That's very admirable. That is. That's very admirable.
I try.
I'm a schmuck.
You're a harder grader. You're demanding.
You know why?
Why?
I got the blood of 1,000 eternities running through my veins.
The blood of an eternity of elementary school teachers in my family running through my veins. That's a true story.
My back really hurts. guys, if you saw this movie, if you have thoughts on this movie, we want to hear from you. We want to hear from you as always. We will reach out, and we're going to recap 6 Degrees of MMO in a couple days.
Yes.
It's been a long time coming, about a month or so, but we're finally going to get the
end of
that.
We got a bunch of responses.
Yeah, we did. Proud of those.
If you want,
as always.
We're going to read a bunch of responses, too. So if you want to send us, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis to Mike Myers, do that IMDb thing. It doesn't have to be a three, you know, step thing.
No.
A two-step thing. It could be a 27-step thing.
It's for you to have fun. We love that you guys have fun with it.
Points for creativity and ambition.
And bragging rights to the winner, which is the most important currency of all. Reach out to us for those and any other critics, comments, questions, concerns. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine. Mike, Mike, and Oscar.com at gmail.com and on Reddit. We are available everywhere you hear podcasts, hopefully. Couple places you don't. We're working on getting there too. If we are not there already, Michael, is it going to be the quote?
No, we've
right,
killed,
what are your
we've,
words
we've
of wisdom?
Stomped that dead horse to a Nazi zombie at this point.
Okay. Words of wisdom, sir.
Und is a fun way to say and.
That's, fair.
It's true.
I can't argue with that. You can't argue with that.
I've had having fun with it all day.
All right, und. Guys. We'll check you out next time.
See you.